Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 504. In this episode of Hansel Minutia, Scott talks again with Richard Campbell about technology, gadgets, industry trends, and new directions.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. This is Hansel Minutia number 17. Hansel Minutia is exactly what it sounds like. It's a portmanteau with my name and minutia. This is random stuff that I talk about with my friend Richard. And this started when I used to call Richard when I had some rant or something that bugged the heck out of me. And I would talk to you on the phone and we would complain. And somewhere around halfway through it, you would say, why don't we just record these?
Yeah.
So these are, you're kind of like a regular guest on the podcast, and you come on and we rant about stuff. But also, you know, you do some angel investing, and you're a techie and a gadgety person. So we also talk about the direction that the world is going from a technology perspective.
And it occurs to me, we've done this for like 8 years.
Yeah, the podcast, you are probably episode 501. I think I hit episode 500 last week.
Nice. Did you do something celebratory?
500 is not a round number.
It's pretty
maybe
round.
Maybe for 512, an actual round number.
Okay. A real round number.
Yeah. So I just came off a whole lot of travel, and I'm
You and me both.
My soul is tired.
See, was it William Gibson who said that jet lag is actually the effects of your soul being pulled out of your body from jet travel?
It just takes time for it to catch up later. Yeah, it really does. I've been going to bed early and getting up early. The thing that is nice about doing jet travel when you travel west is you get the superpower of being a morning person.
Oh, just like that, for free.
Right. Yeah. So I'm temporarily a morning person, which kind of sucks because I don't like morning people. So now I don't like myself. And that is a problem because I usually like myself pretty well.
Now, in this flurry of my travel, I went to South Africa. And so I flew for 12 hours and didn't change time zones. And that literally lets you know, I went from Frankfurt to South Africa. And that really lets you know how much air travel sucks versus time zone changes. Turns out air travel sucks.
I gotcha. So you were moving west at the same speed at which the earth turns and ended up arriving the same moment you left.
Pretty much. Well, 12 hours later, but you know, no excuses for why you're so tired and cranky.
Yeah, I'm a mess. I'm a mess. And my last travel was north and south. So I've got north south jet lag as well.
Right.
It's awful. Speaking of feeling like crap, and actually I can measure it now. I went and I got the band two. Did you get one of these yet?
I have not yet, but it is on a Christmas list for the wife. Yeah. So she wants one.
For the people who are listening to the podcast, you can go and look at the YouTube, go to my YouTube at youtube.com/Chanselman. The new band is, it's pretty nice. It is actually much, much more, comfortable than the previous one. It's interesting because it's the first reaction you'll have when you look at the new band is it looks big and bulky. What's happened is they've taken the sides of the band, which were big and bulky on the original band, and they moved it to the bottom. This part here. They moved the, heart monitor to here.
Right.
And, while it looks bulky, it is so much more comfortable. The original band, you had to put on and then suffer for a month and then go, ugh, that really sucks. And then you'd eventually forget about it.
Right. You know, you get used to it.
You get used to it.
So there's sensors on the back of it, and there's also sensors at the clasp.
Right. There's a galvanic skin response one at the top.
Right.
And then there is the heart rate one at the bottom. The result is though a much more comfortable band. Mm-hmm. I got one for my wife, and it immediately replaced her Fitbit, and she totally digs it.
So what instrumentation are you using? Like, what has it got?
It's got like 12 or 13 things, but the ones that are interesting, of course, the pulse and stuff like that. The UV ray one is nice. If you're outside, it'll tell you how long till you'll burn, mm-hmm. Which for me is about 10 minutes. what I like about it is, of course, the web tile stuff that I helped design. So right. I can make little apps. So like here is that one that says, let's see the webcam. Webcam never does
focus
a good
crisis.
Job at this. The one that says AP is the Associated Press web tile, and it actually shows you the news. You can go and make your own web tile. So even with a very little, anyone who does JavaScript or the tiny little bit of HTML can make a web tile.
Nice.
And a web tile is just a zip file with a JavaScript file inside it. And I made one to track my blood sugar. You could make one for any device around your house or any JavaScript or a blog, your favorite blog or anything that returns XML or JSON. That's actually a visual designer you can drag around and make. So if you had a build server or anything at all, you could in 10 minutes make a tile, which is nice.
Yeah.
This one also has a barometric pressure. Mm-hmm. So it knows how far upstairs you went. So it counts flights of stairs.
And that's a Fitbit trick too, but could it figure out if you had a tornado coming?
I don't know. Or maybe you just think you went downstairs really fast. I do not know.
I remember hanging around with a meteorological geek at the Eglin Air Force Base outside of Fort Walton Beach, Florida, and he kept on his wall the barometric readings of a tornado going right over the facility he was in, and just he was so excited at the pressure drop. Like it got higher and higher and higher pressure, and suddenly this bang as the thing went over it and then came back up again. Yeah. That, for a meteorologist, is a big deal.
Yeah.
Sorry. Remember when you got excited about your build and your wife just didn't care?
I was just trying to feign interest. Yeah, that's exciting. I don't really care.
Well, I was nicer about it.
I apologize. That is fascinating.
I don't need your pity enthusiasm, honestly.
It's all good. One other thing I got that I'm happy about is I took my Surface and I replaced it. I have a Surface Pro 3.
Yep.
The Surface Pro 4 came out and, I've literally
instantly made your 3 worthless.
Well, yeah. I've literally just paid this thing off. So I don't want to go and buy something. I just paid for this thing.
Right.
But I got the keyboard, the Surface
Pro. I've
heard
the 4 keyboard's great.
So here's the deal. Like, I don't work for Microsoft Marketing, but if mm-hmm. I did, I would make a Surface Pro 3 upgrade pack, right? And I would sell the new keyboard and the new pen, and it makes your Surface Pro 3 better.
Nice.
Like, they should just be like a $100 pack or $150 pack, and you buy it, you drop in the new keyboard and the new, new pen. Everything is better. Like, this, it's a great device. Like, to be clear, but once you've used this keyboard, that's it. It's over. Like, you'll never, the old keyboard will offend you. And, the new one with the fingerprint.
This keyboard's pretty nice too, man.
Yeah. That's the Surface Pro, that's the Surface Book, which we will talk about.
Yep.
But I'm just saying that I can sit here with this guy and then just put the fingerprint and then I'm logged in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's really nice. So yeah, I'm very, very happy with that purchase. I recommend it to everyone. I did a blog post about it recently. Also,
I
understand.
Pretty unhappy with your 3 after the 4 came out. You played with the book. You're like, well, now this thing's obsolete.
Well, okay. So there's a couple of things there. There's the Surface Pro 4, which has a better screen, smaller bezel, faster speed.
Yeah.
But it was the keyboard that was the trick.
Yeah.
And when they added the drivers for the fingerprint to enable the 4 keyboard on the 3, I'm sold. I'm good. I don't need a 4. I'm happy.
Nice.
But you went and bought a Surface Book.
So I actually ordered this thing while the keynote was still going on. In fact, I had finished my order before I knew the screen came off.
Is it the ultimate laptop that they promised you?
It is the nicest laptop I've had, and I've had some pretty nice laptops. It is clearly first generation hardware. So I have had 3 firmware updates in a week and been a little twitchy here and there, but there's so much good about this machine.
Mm-hmm. Is it a little top heavy at all?
Yes. It doesn't sit well on your lap. It'll tend to lean back, but I don't tend to use it on my lap.
It's a laptop, though. I thought the whole point of the argument against the Surface is the lack of lappability.
Right.
If I can't expect that from a Surface Book.
And it depends on the lap. I can use it there. I just tend not to. Okay. I never thought I'd use the screen pull-off feature, and I've immediately used it. So we did a hackathon this past weekend for Humanitarian Toolbox. And so I was walking around checking in with devs about make sure we're working on the key milestone items and stuff. And having the screen loose, it just made it really pleasant to do.
Mm-hmm. And they call that clipboard mode, right? You basically used it as a clipboard.
There it is.
So you pulled it off here. And again, people who are listening have to go and check it out at the YouTube page.
I don't know if you can see this picture, but that is a photograph from the Discovery satellite, which is an L1. So it's between the Earth and the Sun. Mm-hmm. And it actually, there's a camera facing the planet all the time, which is, of course, fully illuminated because it's between the Earth and the Sun. And they happened to catch a picture as the moon was transiting in front of the Earth. So that is the dark side of the moon.
That's real?
That's real. That is not a composed photograph.
You're not
going
to make me go to Snopes and discover this is not real.
I got it from NASA. So it's the real thing.
Okay. So you're happy with the laptop, though?
Hey, you know, it's been a week. So far, so good. I've moved everything over to it. I spent the past week on the road, and I carried my old laptop and the new one. And now I'm feeling like I can carry just the new one. Although I ordered another gadget I haven't picked up yet, which is one of those Asus 1080p monitors that are both powered and signaled by USB 3.
So really?
It's a 15-inch screen, weighs less than a pound.
Is that possible?
Comes with its own stand, and you plug it into your USB 3 port, extension monitor.
And what is this called?
It's an Asus monitor. I think it's the 169B.
169B monitor, huh? There was a thing called MIMO monitors that you could use the display link technology, and you could send HDMI over. Excuse me, not HDMI. You could send video over USB 3. Is it really? It's probably doing some compression though, isn't it?
It's USB 3. It should be able to do it. It's only 1080p, so you're not talking any miracles.
This Asus says it's 1366 by 768.
So there's one model that's 768, one model that's 1080, but is a TN, and one that's a 1080, but it's IPS.
Scandalous. Interesting. And you like this. This is a good thing.
I just ordered it. I haven't gotten it yet. But I'd seen one in the wild and then went, yep, I want that.
Well, you know, they've got that Duet application, which is, and there's another one called Air Display. These are using your iPad as a second screen.
Right.
Duet for, I think it's 15 or 16 bucks will let you do that. But one of them, I forgot, I think it is Duet prefer, you know, some of them do it wirelessly, which is not good. But this is it. It's a Duet display. It is wired connection. So it's only your computer to your iPad with a wired connection. So basically two screens, and you could be in a hotel room somewhere with your laptop and then boom, you've got a second screen.
Right.
I've been exploring that as a possibility for my Surface.
Well, I've been carrying the two laptops, which are a bit too heavy, but it's nice to have the second screen. So now I just want to carry the screen.
Interesting. But I don't know. I've already got an iPad lying around.
If you can use that iPad screen, use it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Then, of course, you have to deal with the DPI difference as you move from screen to screen, though. I got to think of that as well. Okay. That's a good. I got to put all this in the show notes because this is giving me food for thought.
I've got the link. I'll send it to you.
Okay. Cool. I think the last time we did this, had we talked about Google changing its name?
Nope.
The holding company name to Alphabet?
That was May. Yeah, when we last did this. So I think maybe it was just happening.
But it was something like that.
No, that was the show we were going to talk about Google I.O. And then you had that incident in Subway. And that's all we talked about.
There's always some incident at Subway that gets me upset about stuff.
So your thoughts on Alphabet?
they kind of announced it, then it became a non-issue. I was kind of waiting to see if there would be other things after this, like another, like Google's the G, and then is there another company that is another letter? Have they done that already? Have they announced other companies underneath it?
Not that I've seen. I thought it was just a legal game. They want to play with ownership. They want to be legal in the SEC rules. So this is just a way of packaging up the company differently and hiding their reporting so they don't have to admit that they're spending money on asteroid mining.
I thought it was not a tax thing. I thought it was about focus. Like Google did search, and then they'd have a health division, and then they'd have a asteroid mining division or whatever. Like it was about separate companies with each individual focus.
Well, I'd hope so, but I guess we'll see what actually happens.
Hey, folks, I wanted to take a moment to tell you about Raygun and their new product called Pulse. Raygun is an error and crash reporting software provider, and their new product, Pulse, it's a real-time user monitoring product. It gives you performance data and user insights, lets you understand exactly what's happening when users interact with your software, so you're never left guessing. Raygun provides you with the answers to your performance questions, and they've found over 10 billion, that's billion with a B, bugs in customer apps with their crash reporting product, and now Raygun will help you understand application quality like no one else. Over 30,000 developers worldwide can't be wrong. I use Raygun all the time, and I enjoy it very much. You can try it out today with a no-risk 30-day free trial. Start improving your software quality immediately. Try Raygun for free today at raygun.io. Speaking of shell games and funny names for everyone thinks that there's a new car company coming, not Tesla, but one called Faraday, because apparently we're going to name all of our car companies after famous electrical engineering people.
I had not heard this.
And okay, so Faraday is, go ahead and start Googling around for it there. It sounds like it's a shell company that it's actually hiding the Apple car.
That would make sense.
Yeah. And I don't know if I want an Apple car.
Yeah, there's something said about that. But, you know, making cars is way harder than it looks. You know, it's one of those things we take for granted.
Why is that? Because the suspension is so difficult?
It's all of the things. You know, when we got fascinated by cars as a kid, you know, in my teens, you needed to maintain your car. You had to constantly tinker with it. Cars needed care and feeding. And then about 20 years ago or so, they just stopped. They got to a level of manufacturing and design where, A, you couldn't work on it, and B, they didn't break. You know, they took them in once or twice a year for maintenance, and that was it. And that represents a very sophisticated level of manufacturing. I don't think other companies can get into that easily.
That's interesting. Also, it brings up the question about maintenance. I'm realizing I turned a computer on. I have a Mac here and a PC that I don't use very often.
Yep.
And I turned them both on, and it's been maybe 3 months. Each of them, and I'm not trying to pick on Mac or PC, each of them required way more app updating, system updating, Windows updating than I think is required after just 3 months off the network.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a lot to ask. Does the same thing happen if I park the car at long-term parking? Is it going to just go and get all the different updates and firmwares and stuff? What? You know, even a modestly old car, like an early 2000s Prius, still has to get firmware updates.
Yeah. But just because you parked a car doesn't mean it's actually off. Like, is the real issue here that your machines are actually off? They should be in a standby mode, picking up their updates on their own time. Not, you know, the sin is interrupting you. That when you turn that machine on because you needed to use it right then, it's like, oh, wait, I have things to do before I can serve you.
No, that's a good point. And interestingly enough, you know, Windows has done a decent job about that lately. Mm-hmm. They've been adding this idea of, I will do the install when you're not busy.
Right.
You know, and they'll let you schedule it, or they'll just notice that you're not busy. So yeah. I have not, with Windows 10, had a time when I have been interrupted by the update.
Yeah.
It just has been happening. But from a car perspective, how can the car not know that you're going to jump in like right now and race to the hospital?
Yeah, I think there's a probability thing too.
Yeah.
You know, you're less likely in the wee hours of the morning. Maybe it's got some history to you, so it knows what you tend to do. But even if it is updating, why would you stop from driving? You know, my new Infiniti, and I've had a few, has a very slow boot time.
Your car boots up?
Oh, yeah. And it's visible. two different screens. They start at different times. They say loading apps.
Can you drive it while it's booting?
Absolutely. And more importantly, when you flip it in reverse, the reverse camera lights up right away. The most annoying part of that behavior is if you've left the radio on when you park the car, it will be on when you start the car and you can't turn it off and you can't turn it down. Up. Is it still booting?
So it's loud and screaming at you.
Well, you know how when you come home, you've been rocking it out on the long drive home. You know, I'm coming back from Redmond. So the music's loud. And then you get in the car the next morning, turn it on. You're like, and there's nothing you can do.
Because it's soft buttons.
It's all soft buttons. So now I'm in the reflex of part of me turn the car off is turn the radio off.
Yikes.
Yeah, I'm accommodating my car.
This is the Internet of Things, right? We talked a little bit about this before, the idea of all the different things we have to update firmware for.
Yes.
I've got these light bulbs that still have old firmware because it's just now it's just tedious and they're not automatically updating themselves.
Yes.
And I saw a guy on Facebook recently was saying that he had to put a firmware update on his fridge. He's rebooting his refrigerator in some way.
I love that.
But the concerning part is that these companies that are making all these Internet of Things, the Internet of Crap, is that they're not always going to be around. You know, like some of these light bulbs that I've got, I don't even know if the company's around anymore. You know, like it was a Kickstarter.
But that's no different than Osborne or Columbia or companies fail.
But those aren't being used anymore by the masses, right? Like what I'm saying is that it's conceivable that millions of Internet of Thing items could be sold and the company could still fail and then they are all a liability.
Yes.
Right. They're all just floating out there providing a bridge into my house.
A path of vulnerability without a doubt. Just like that access point that the subway had, right? Maybe the company still exists, but they're not going to update it.
Well, and the other thing that's happening is that there are products that are having Internet capabilities added to them by companies that it is the internet part of the product is not their expertise.
Right. Core skill set.
I saw this brilliant young woman named Runa Sandvik at the Trondheim Developers Conference a couple weeks ago, and she and her team had hacked into a sniper rifle that the company had added Wi-Fi to. Right. Like I'm not a big gun person, but I'm sure it's a lovely gun.
Sniper rifle.
It also has this ability to identify targets and then fire. And they basically hacked into it and lied to it about what the target was.
Nice.
Now it's not a self-shooting weapon, but it is I want to point at that thing and then it will decide about wind speed and all the stuff and then do the adjustments. And they just lied to it so they can point it at other stuff. and the company that made this weapon is not particularly interested in fixing it.
Interesting.
Which kind of gets to my point that they probably shouldn't have added Wi-Fi to it because, security hardening and firmware and all that kind of stuff was not their, not only that was not their, their expertise, then their, principal way of being. And then also who's going to update the firmware on their gun?
Right. Well, it's a liability. I think you're fairly motivated to do that. But the bigger thing is, why did they add Wi-Fi? Like, they're not committing to the full requirement. It's not just a checkbox. You're putting it in. It takes some care of feeding.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. Then you need an entire organization behind it to manage that thing. Like, when your company enters the world of the Internet of Things by adding new stuff, if it's just one person, right? These products always seem to fail. They always seem to include not enough. Like, for example, when people add Wi-Fi to different things, often you'll go and look at their open source licenses and you'll see that they use open source software, but then they don't include the license.txt.
Yeah.
Or they don't include the list of the software that they ship with the thing. So then you see all these people complaining, like, this violates the GPL or they haven't really released the source or whatever. And it's just this kind of laissez-faire attitude about the Internet of Things that it's really starting to bug me. It makes me afraid to want to plug any of these things in. Not that I'm going to plug a sniper rifle into my house, but light bulbs at least.
Yeah. In a related note, this past weekend, The Atlantic magazine put out an article called Programmers, Stop Calling Yourselves Engineers.
Ooh, that's a controversial.
And it's an indictment of this is what engineering discipline looks like. And I know you guys are using the title, but you haven't earned it.
programmers stop calling yourself engineers. It undermines a long tradition of designing and building infrastructure in the public interest.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
Well, and I can't disagree with the argument that the author's making.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is a valid argument. And actually, I'm in the middle of writing a blog post right now that talks about my concern that we have outsourced QA to the end user.
Yep.
Because the update cycle in the cloud enables us to update most stuff much quicker. So that means we can put sloppy things out.
Yep.
But that only works, you know, in the old days, of course, you work really hard for 2 years and you put out a really solid first release. And it now, it like seems everything is version 0.9.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Permanent betas.
We are in a state of perma beta and I don't like it because I just, you know how when you're at a party or a cocktail party and you hear like, I don't really go to cocktail parties. You're somewhere and there's that moment of calm when everyone stops their sentence at the same time.
Yep.
You know, and it's just like, oh, and you know how it's rare, right? This has been happening my entire life, but it's still rare that I notice it. Okay.
Yeah, it's a thing
that happens in software. So there's a moment where Windows 10 was released and my browser was stable and and Office 2016 was stable. And there was silence for a moment where everything worked for about a week, you know, and then all the betas started up again.
Yep.
And then it was iOS 9, everything was great. Everything was fine. And then, you know, I just have to have the taco emoji. So I put the beta of 9.1 on my, and then everything just goes to heck.
Yep.
And you'd think with standards like IMAP and whatnot that, you know, and CalDAV, I'd be able to talk to my Gmail. But even now, I'm getting errors on iOS 9 because I can't...
Standards.
Well, it's very frustrating. I've complained about this before, but I'm starting to realize that the outsourcing of QA is one of the larger problems that's bugging me.
Well, and this is the indictment of the engineering thing, right? Like, look, if you ran around calling yourself a doctor and trying to do doctory type things, like you're going to get it charged. Like, it's a crime. We put engineer in our title. We talk about software engineering groups.
Yeah.
And in real engineering, civil engineering, you know, this may be one engineer in that entire group that's an actual engineer. That's a PE, a practicing engineer that's certified, that maintains all the rules and is beholden to the public, not to his company, but to the public, to the certifying body.
Yeah, I mean, I have to. I'm looking at this Atlantic article right here, and it's talking about skyscrapers and bridges and power plants and elevators, you know, and the thing about them is that there are professional standards and expectations, and you put your life in, you know, in the hands of the engineers that create this kind of stuff, and that's the difference between the kind of people that make websites, like I do, and the kind of people who make, you know, actual baby monitors that run in neonatal wards and medical software that kind of has to work and
just the elevator systems. Software. Like you can kill somebody with an elevator pretty easily. You know,
well, yeah, just say, oh, we'll patch that. It's a small update.
And we all have the great stories of, you know, the software failed and you know, people are endangered because of it.
This is a really interesting article here. Civil engineering, mechanical engineering, aerospace engineering, chemical. These are all engineerings that are pretty noble. And this article is basically implying that software engineers,
for the most part.
And I think when they say software engineers, they're talking about, you know, the mainstream consumer type applications, not necessarily people that are working on actual control systems and stuff. I assume that there must be some. Like when I was working in banking, like we took quality quite seriously. We didn't whip out a new version of the banking software every week.
Yeah, but we both went through 99 and it was all hands on deck to try and survive the 2000 rollover.
Right. Yeah. And we
worked on a lot of stuff really fast. The testing was sort of post facto. I mean, we got through it. I figured the 2000 was going to be the point at which real regulation hit the software industry. We were going to crush the world with the Y2K bug. And
right,
and that was going to be it.
The stuff that really mattered, though, in Y2K was getting fixed.
Everything got fixed.
But it was being fixed quietly because mm-hmm. it was infrastructure stuff. And the stuff that did break, like alarm clocks and stuff.
Didn't matter.
It didn't really matter that much.
But the banking system survived. I worked mm-hmm. on that. I think yeah. you did, too.
Yeah.
And I know folks that worked on other utility aspects, water and electricity and so forth. We did have to fix it. Every real engineering discipline has sort of seminal moments. You know, in Canada, they talk about this bridge collapse that happened in 1900 and that supposedly made rings out of the iron from that collapsed bridge that every engineer wears as part of their oath saying never again.
Really?
What is going to be our iron ring moment for software? Because it's clearly coming.
I was watching Minority Report. Which mm-hmm. is this really great, not the movie, but the TV show. Mm-hmm. It's a great TV show, and the tragedy is it probably won't be renewed, but it's really, really good.
Interesting.
Like, it's really good. And it's good because it talks about, because it's set in 2065,
yep.
and they talk about the past, like it was like the actual past, and then we're all carried forward by it, and it's really interesting. And on an episode I was watching yesterday, two of these hackers were talking, and one of them was like, you know, we all thought it was going to change after 2035 when like everyone's email became public, you know,
right.
and like that was the hack. Everyone's email became public and they said, you know, 15 million suicides happened because of that, because of every single person on the planet's email became public. And that's when whatever crypto's scenario, you know, that's when we encrypted the internet.
Right.
And when you're listening to that, and I was listening to that, you know, like going, wow, I could totally see that happening.
Yeah.
You know, like some epic hack, you know, yeah. some Snowden to plus two powers, epic consumer level hack, you know,
yeah.
like everyone's Facebook becomes public or whatever.
Whatever it is.
Would that be, like you said, the Iron Ring moment that would flip everything?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take, but we need to become an engineering discipline. We are eating the world and we're doing it very haphazardly.
Hmm. Very wise, sir. Very wise. Very wise. We're coming up on 30 minutes. What else do we have?
Did a humanitarian toolbox hackathon this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Did it on the Microsoft property. It was at the garage in Building 27.
What did you all build? People can go and Google for humanitarian toolbox and learn about the software that you make to help the Red Cross and disaster
right.
recovery and all.
So we were working on the Red Cross project, the project called Already. We're mm-hmm. actually getting to the minimum viable product. We're ready to put it in the field this month.
Seriously?
Yeah. We're there.
Wow. Congratulations.
That's it was exciting. A really great sprint. Like a great group. Some MVPs, a couple RDs, and a bunch of regular developers that just were interested in the project. We all came together and mm-hmm. and we hauled. We wrote
tightening
a lot of code.
Some screws and getting it ready for release.
Yeah. And had a couple of Red Cross people there. So they're looking at taking it out. And the goal is, this is the first scenario, because this app can do a lot of different things, is putting smoke detectors into homes that don't have them. So finding qualified installers that'll donate their time and mm-hmm. homes that need them and just using some geolocation to coordinate them so that each installer, you know, the one thing Red Cross has taught me is just because someone's a volunteer doesn't mean you should waste their time, right? Mm-hmm. Value the time available. So here's a qualified installer. And if we do everything by hand, maybe you'll get a couple of smoke detectors installed in a day. But if I get the software right, maybe 6, 8, 10 in a day. Like, that's just mm-hmm. simply saving lives.
Very cool. And this yeah. is, people can go and see this code. It's all up on GitHub?
Yep. GitHub.com/HDBox/already.
Okay. And of course, if they go and they Google for a humanitarian toolbox, they'll find it. And then yep. from there, they can also find the
and
code.
HDBox.org if you can't spell humanitarian.
You're saying HTBox.
B-O-X. B-O-X.
Humanitarian toolbox box. Cool.
Yeah, HDBox.
Well, thank you very much, Richard Campbell, for chatting with me.
My pleasure, sir. Always fun.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.